This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Thanks for listening to the Von Hessler Doctrine Podcast. Remember, you can hear the show every weekday from 9 to noon right here on 95.5 WSB, Atlanta's news and talk. Live from the heart of Atlanta, Georgia and beyond, hour one of the Von Hessler Doctrine begins right now. I am your lovable, for the time being, not so huggable mid-morning chat host, Eric Von Hessler. The other voices you hear are the doctrinaires. Man of a thousand voices, Tim Andrews. Crofton, Maryland's newest barfly, Autumn Fisher. And the handsomest producer in all of producery, Jared Yamamoto.
And I've already had a busy morning, Eric, cleaning out my fridge, my pantry, and just getting rid of everything in there, man.
Oh, these politically correct pancake companies. Can I just say something right out of the chute here? It's the family show. Is it okay to say that right out of the chute?
Yeah, it is your show.
Right out of the chute. It is my show. Right out of the chute here. Do we have to get angry about every damn thing that comes down? I feel like people are on such edge that they only know how to respond to things emotionally, and 9 times out of 10, that emotion is anger. And some of it is tied to tradition, I guess. I got news for everybody. This is a fact of life. Maybe the most important, if you want to be able to adjust to your life as the years go by, the most important thing to come to terms with is that change is the only thing that stays the same throughout your life. Things change. And if the Aunt Jemima, it's actually, they're owned by Quaker Oats, who, by the way, the Quakers were by 1761, they were on the record as being against slavery. So I don't know if real Quakers own Quaker Oats, but Quaker Oats owns Aunt Jemima. And they've decided that Aunt Jemima is based on a racial stereotype. And guess what? That's true. You can't get around the fact that that's true. And you're going to get angry. I just know that there, I haven't even looked. I'll bet you there are 10 angry callers on the open mic. I'll never use Aunt Jemima again. How dare you? Well, what were you in love with, the label or the actual flavor of the syrup?
Yeah.
So what you're saying
it
is...
It can't be the syrup.
No, it can't be the syrup. It's the label. It's gonna. What you're saying is, in my life, I want things not to change. That is one thing, people. That's a recipe for misery, not just in this, but in all things. Your kids aren't kids anymore. You got to deal with it. Things change. That restaurant we always went to, it's gone. It's a bank now. If you're going to let these things drive you crazy, you will have a life of being driven crazy. Whoever the Quaker Oats people own Aunt Jemima, they need to sell syrup and pancake mix for the next 10, 20, 50, 150 years. You should have no emotional reaction to the fact that that company has decided the best way to sell more syrup and pancake mix in the future is to get rid of this. Yes, you may be comfortable with it, but you cannot make a decent argument to me or anyone else that Aunt Jemima is not based on a racial stereotype. Now, you could say that's not important or it is important, but you cannot make a good case that it's not a racial stereotype. And here we are in 2020 in a life where we know things do change and people have decided we want to dial back on the iconic racial stereotypes. If this makes you angry, boy, oh boy, you're going to be angry a lot in your life. Not just on these social issues, but you can't handle the fact that change is the only thing that stays the same throughout your life. Now, it can go too far. What do you do with Gone with the Wind? So HBO Max comes out, and they have rights to Gone with the Wind. They roll out. Everything happens. They decide to pull it back. They've made a decision. We're going to put it back on HBO Max, but we're going to do it with, like when you watch Turner Classics. You know, somebody's going to speak to you before the movie, put things in context, let you know what it's all about. The history of the whole thing. But I see that Queen Latifah is making a lot of news saying, oh, Gone with the Wind should just go away forever. And here's the thing, and Autumn and I argue about this all the time. I actually think Gone with the Wind is a bit overrated as a movie, having nothing to do with this. I think it's a bit overrated. I can't figure out who the hell I'm supposed to root for, and I can't see that anybody learns any lesson anywhere along the way, even when the comeuppance smacks them in the face. Me, Gone with the Wind tells me that a woman could get her comeuppance and still be a jerk for the rest of her life. I don't know who to root for in that, and I will tell you that personally, for myself, it's always been a bit of a cringe watch, at least at certain points. It's a cringe watch. And I understand where Queen Latifah is coming from. Ah, but here's the rub. Hattie McDaniel, who was in that movie, is the first African-American. Not the first African-American female. The first African-American to ever win an Oscar. So I say, so Queen Latifah, when you throw it away, do you throw away that history? Doesn't that tarnish that great name and that great accomplishment? Yes, she had to play a mammy and slave and all that. That was the movie, I understand. But she's the first African-American to ever win an Oscar. Also, you know, you think about film schools and film studies. Most people who follow film, whether they're considered experts or just aficionados or whatever, most people consider the year that Gone with the Wind came out to be the greatest year in movie releases, especially in terms of Hollywood, but not just in Hollywood, really actually around the world. You know, 1939 is a year of the Wizard of Oz, Stagecoach, Gone with the Wind, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, Hunchback of Notre Dame, many more all come out in the same year. And Wizard of Oz and Gone with the Wind directed by the same guy. So in 1 year. And so my question is this, if Gone with the Wind is gone forever, in film schools or just film studies courses, do we just not teach about 1939? Because I have to believe that that's a big part of these studies, is this 1 year where all these amazing movies were released, not just in America, but around the world. Do we just not teach that that year was important? Do we teach that year without Gone with the Wind? Do you not show Gone with the Wind to future movie makers? If you do, you're not showing future cinematographers, you know, an amazingly cinema. It's lighting, the sets, all of that is, you know, wildly important. So where do you draw the line? I think you got to figure something out with Gone with the Wind. I think Gone with the Wind is worth, even though I think it's overrated as a movie, and we can argue about that. Yep. I love arguing with Autumn about that because she just won't budge.
Because I'm right. Why would I budge if I'm right?
She likes to root for capricious bitches, apparently.
Yes. And
she loves to see this up on the talking all the women in that movie.
You're not talking about Melanie. Do not besmirch the name of Melanie.
She's the one good person is so weak, she drives you crazy. So
you couldn't drag a cat.
So we have to figure out, I think that people have to stepping in and going, look, we cannot totally trash this film, Gone with the Wind, because many people consider it one of the best movies ever made. I don't, but certainly in terms of cinematography and some other things, it's quite notable. But if you're going to get that upset about Aunt Jemima changing their logo or their name, then you're just getting upset about everything. You know, if we're going to get to any solutions at this time, everyone isn't going to walk away with everything. For instance, I happen to believe that this whole immunity thing with cops, it's a hard sell, but it's necessary. You're just not going to get good cops in the future if they can be, you know, just railroaded every time, you know, the popular sentiment goes against them. They have to have protections. So if you're going to make that argument in the midst of all of this, guess what? Let go of Aunt Jemima. It's an easy one to let go. Gone with the Wind, a little more difficult. It's art. It's not as good as people say that it is, but it is art.
No, you're wrong.
Oh, fiddly D. You know, truthfully, I was thinking about Gone with the Wind, and then I was watching a podcast, and somebody else had this idea. But it's probably not a bad idea. You know how, like, evangelical Christians, there's like edits of movies that are popular movies, and then there's like a Christian edit where you
Inglourious Basterds is 15 minutes long.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know that you can put every movie to it, but like take a movie like Mission Impossible, right? That maybe just have some things in it that I don't want to show my kids or if I'm Christian, and they make little edits and they make a Christian edit. And I heard somebody say that, you know, Gone with the Wind, you could do something like that too. I mean, you're never going to get away. The offense of any story where slaves are depicted as happy, I mean, just you're not going to get that out of the movie, which is just ridiculous. It's a romance. It never happened that slaves were happy to be slaves. That never happened. But in the worst parts of the movement, you could probably snip a minute here, 2 minutes there, and end up with like 10 minutes on the cutting room floor and make it less of a cringe viewing for people who don't want to have to deal with that. But my point is, there is nuance here. Gone with the Wind, worth having a real conversation about. Aunt Jemima, if you're angry about changing Aunt Jemima, you are going to be angry an awful lot in your lifetime. And while we're talking about canceling Aunt Jemima, what about Mrs. Buttersworth? I mean, that's a whole, you know, look, the whole bottle is based on a racial stereotype. Yeah. Am I wrong?
And also, I don't know if that bottle is still the same, is it?
Has that been changed? I've grown up, and I have real syrup when I eat bread. I'm not a kid
anymore.
You should
get syrup locally here in Georgia, up in the mountains. It's delicious.
Okay, that's fine. Hey, Mr. Local Economy. I got you. I'm just saying.
We're local, yeah.
I tend to
the backyard and
I'm gravitated toward more high-end syrups as I've gotten older and a little more successful in my lifetime. But I don't know if has the bottle been changed? Because another thing, besides the racial stereotype there, I've always thought it was disturbing that you crack a lady's head open to get your syrup put over the pancakes. I'm drinking this out of her body? I don't know. It just kind of doesn't
Dahmer
seem like...
Dahmer Industries presents Mrs. Buttersworth syrup.
It doesn't seem hygienic at the very least. So... you know, it's not just right-wing, conservative, traditionalist. I think it's foolish. I'm sure the open mics are just full of people who don't know why they're angry. Man, I'll never have Aunt Jemima again because they can't handle change in life. But let's be fair here. It's not just traditionalists, whether they're conservative, that can't handle change. I mean, remember the year before? I remember a story about Walmart wanted to build a store in Athens, Georgia. Okay. And all the local folky Athens glitterati musician artsy fartsy, they all came together to say, no, not in our Athens. We're not going to have
value
that kind
elsewhere.
Yeah, exactly. We're not going to have that. Meanwhile,
in Commerce,
the place,
Georgia.
Yeah, the place that Walmart wanted to build, I don't remember if they actually built or not, but I know the place that they wanted to build was like, the locals called it something like Needle Park. I mean, an upgrade. Walmart would have been a great upgrade, but the idea was, Athens, you want to like change Athens. And my point to, you know, all the artsy-fartsy members of Drive-By Truckers or whatever is, you do recognize that the Athens that you love, where the 40 watt is and that whole strip and all of that, that didn't always look like that. Long before you were born, it took bulldozers to make the Athens you love happen because it was just farmland. It was trees and meadows. But you grew up with something that you want to hang on to. So it's not just traditionalist conservatives that can't handle Aunt Jemima changing their ways. It's every member of Drive-By Truckers and all their friends who are convinced that their Athens is the Athens. Your Athens, Patterson Hood, did not exist without lots of bulldozers before you were born. If you can't handle that change is the only thing that stays the same, you will be perpetually angry in your life. And when you talk about Aunt Jemima, and that's about Aunt Jemima, just let it go. Gone with the Wind, we have to have a long conversation on. But there's always, if this keeps up, there always it'll always come back to the greatest novel, American novel ever written, which is Huck Finn. And we have to be able to, we have to be able to teach nuance. And with, you know, Mark Twain was on the right side of history. It's just that he wrote a book about people in an area and he wrote it in their dialect. The truth is, with Huck Finn, I have always been kind of shocked that it's always been the race thing that's tried to shut that down. I've been a little bit shocked. I think some people, I think so many of us have read some sort of cleaned up version of Huck Finn as kids, some sort of condensed thing, and we think it's a lot like Tom Sawyer. It's not. It's a very complex, dark book. I mean, Huck Finn's dad is a drunk who beats him all the time. And I've always been a little bit surprised that that more religious groups haven't gone after this book, because there's been very little discussion of something that jumped out at me the first time I read the book, and I didn't expect it because there's not a lot of discussion on it. And I'm just, I'm not taking a side on this. I'm just saying, for a book that came out in the late, when did it come out? Like 1870 or 75, somewhere, for that came out, that there is there's an argument about religion versus atheism in that book that most people don't seem to pick up on, I'm guessing. But Huck Finn versus Aunt Polly, and an awful lot of, you know, what's going on between their conversations. I only bring that up to say that it's a very deep book. It's nuanced, it's complex, and it's not like Gone with the Wind in the sense that Mark Twain was a very liberal-minded person. But he wrote a book about people in a place, and he wrote it in their dialect. And you could see that as we're cutting down these trees, and I'm just trying to make the point, Aunt Jemima, fine, who cares? Let it go. It's based on a racial stereotype. But if you just start doing the thing with words and triggering, and that has to be canceled, then you're going to do an awful lot of damage. I don't think it's progressive to kill art. And so we're going to have to try to have a more erudite conversation around a lot of these things. And I'm getting ahead of the ball here. I just know Huck Finn always ends up in the queue. It's always going to end up in the queue. And certainly, it's a, unfortunately, Huck Finn, like a lot of great things, you know, Citizen Kane. The only reason people read Huck Finn or see Citizen Kane is because they're required to. It's homework. And that kind of damages its effect anyway. But Huck Finn is usually taught and can be given context. You can't bulldoze everything. But also trying to cling on to Aunt Jemima is very, very silly. Who cares? Let it go. Don't die on that hill. There are other areas where you might want to point out nuance and teaching and context. So Quaker Oats doesn't own Aunt Jemima. PepsiCo owns both of them. Before we get to Expert Say, what went on between China and India? This is bizarre. These are two nuclear powers. And there was hand-to-hand combat. The Chinese threw off of a mountain?
They threw them down a cliff, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to just say something to China and India. If I have, are you listening? China,
yes,
and India.
I'm listening.
Nobody cares. You're being ridiculous. Nobody cares about Kashmir, except for you. You two have decided that this strip of land is so important. What's so great about it? Is there even one sunglass hut there? I would like to know. What? This is just what happens between peoples on the planet Earth. They get so involved with something. I'm going to spend my whole life fighting for the fact that that border should be 5 miles further out. Or farther out. It's absurd. Hey, China. Hey, India. You're being ridiculous. Nobody gives a damn, except for you, about Kashmir. So here's a rule. I don't want to follow Bill Maher with his new rules, but here's a rule from the Von Hessler Doctrine that will be strictly enforced from this point on. China and India, you're not allowed to blow up the world over a strip of land that 99.9% of us don't give a damn about. Okay? That's it. That's the Von Hessler Doctrine dictum. Whatever the hell that means. Let's do this.
The experts say.
Experts say.
No experts are warning.
Experts say.
The experts say.
Experts say.
The experts say on the Von Hessler Doctrine.
Now, these are experts, not experts. That would be guys who used to be named Bert that for one reason or another decided to change. No, the experts are out of it. The experts, however. And we do this because I find it to be one of the things, one of the biggest signs or things you can point to see that reportage is, if not dead, nearly dead in this country. Since the newspapers have lost their standing, where there was editorial control, smarter people at the desk. Now we have bloggers who just go into Vox or whatever. And I see all over the internet in my online news, experts say, it's the lazy reporter's easiest way out. The truth is, you can find an expert, like a statistic, you can find an expert that will be on just about any side of anything. So as a reporter, when you say experts say, generally, you're just finding the experts who agree with what you thought before you started writing your story. So it turns out all the experts say that what I think is correct or the easiest story to tell. Has anyone ever asked you get a name from, some university somewhere in Toronto. Okay, that's an expert. Anybody look it up? Yeah. Where did that so-called expert, I don't know, graduate in his or her class? No one asked the question.
50.
It's like when you see the diploma on the wall when you go to a doctor's visit. You don't really know what kind of student that person was. They got through and they got a diploma. But there were people in that class who were at the top. And then you go right on down. They all got the same diploma, basically. So you have to ask questions. So because there's so many stories that just do that hackneyed, experts say, we decided to go through them in this segment, experts say. What do you have?
So the first one comes from Time.com, which used to be Time Magazine.
Oh, really? Do they not have a hard magazine anymore? Not even dentist office.
I always thought it was pretty hard.
Yeah, it's hard to read.
I don't get it.
When I was growing up,
what are all those shapes?
Yeah, when I was growing up, Time Magazine weighed about 2 pounds.
Yeah,
it came out every week. Now it weighs less than a public service pamphlet from the government on how to wash your hands. Like, if you ever see one in a dental office or something, this cannot weigh an ounce. No advertising. The world has changed, but now they're online. I guess they're doing okay. So what does Time say, and what do their experts say?
Here's their headline. This expert predicted 2020 would be mayhem. Here's what he says may come next.
Okay, don't fall for this one. Don't fall for this one. So I could get on here and say, let's say before the crash, right? The market was flying high. Not this lockdown crash, but the crash in, was it 07 or 08?
08.
So let's say that for the 2 years leading up to that, I came on the radio every day and said, the market's going to crash for 2 years. Then the market crashes. Now I'm that guy who predicted. Now here's the thing. This is a stupid setup. What I really want to know is, what did he predict for 2019? That's where you'll find out just how good this person is at predicting things. Okay, he got 2020 correct. What was his prediction for 2020? Or her. He's, I don't know the expert.
Thank you.
His name is Peter Turchin. He actually have a name this time.
Okay.
And he predicted that there would be a pandemic. He predicted record unemployment rates. And he also predicted national unrest.
Now, did he predict that in December of 2019? Yeah. Because he really could kind of see that there was a potential pandemic on its way. Most people weren't paying attention, but it was happening in other places.
This was back in 2010 when he predicted this.
Okay, that's my point. Right, that's my point. Although, if he did nail 2020, that's luck.
Yes.
That's luck. If in 2010, but did he really, or did he say something like, by 2020? Or something along those lines. Anyway, what's in store for us? Obviously, this is our modern Nostradamus. He looks into some sort of kettle of some witch's brew and sees the future. So what does he see? What does he see? Yeah, it's cauldron. Yeah, only witches and Nostradamus have cauldrons. So what does he see in his cauldron?
Turchin says that there are many signs the U.S. is spiraling towards upheaval in this decade. Basically,
okay, so it's
pandemonium.
All over.
We're going to fall apart, yes.
We're going to fall. So basically, by 20, if I'm to take this guy, this expert, and he is an expert, if I take him by his word, if we make it to January of 2022 and we still recognize this as the United States of America, then we never listen to this expert again. Now, it won't work out that way at all. He'll just write books about how he got 2020 correct. Experts. Well, we'll see, I guess. It could be the end. Could be the end of America as we know it. I doubt it. I've been alive long enough to have survived many endings. It's the problem when you're in your 20s. You think everything is, oh, this has never happened before. Then you get like 30 years older and you're like, oh, no, that happens about every 5 or 6 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like a dragon movie. Every 5 or 10 years, there's like some dragon movie that comes out.
Yeah, it's always successful. And you ask yourself, why don't they make more? Every 5 or 6, maybe that's the formula. Every 5 or 6 years, you get a good dragon movie.
We had Y2K and also the fake 2012 thing, the Mayan thing, too.
Yeah.
Oh,
hey, by
yeah.
the way, wasn't there a story? Did you send me a story about how they've recalibrated the Mayan end of the world? Is this Friday or something? Or was it last Friday or... Somebody sent me a story like that.
Supposed to be
this, was it Tim?
This week, June 20th.
All right, we're not to worry about it. Well, obviously, this expert doesn't know what they're talking about because we're not even going to be around for 2021 because the Mayan calendar, which they got wrong. Every generation, this is what leads me to some skepticism about the whole climate thing. Every generation has had people that have said, this is it. This is the end of the world. And we now look back on all of those generations. So then you have to ask yourself, well, what are the odds that this time it's right? You know, at some point it will be right. But what are the odds that this time it's right? And then once you realize that the odds are more likely you'd be hit by lightning 27 times or something, you begin to relax about these things. What else do you have an expert say?
All right, this next one comes from the Washington Post. Should you get tested for the coronavirus after protesting? Here's what experts say about the risks.
Experts. I love the fact that things are... I guess the idea is because protesting is outdoors.
Yeah.
That maybe it's not going to be as bad. Because I do the juxtaposition, the AB of the way the coverage is of the president doing the rallies again. And what a danger that is. And then the protest, which an awful lot of people in the media are in support of the protest, which is fine, but then they let, we're not going to be as hard on the whole COVID thing or people getting together. I understand the one main difference is that you're protesting outside, but it seems like you're in very close quarters, and there's a lot of shouting, by the way, and that's how you get stuff out of your body. You're shouting around people. A sharing of bullhorns perhaps would not be a good idea in a time like this. But it seems like this is going to be a bit more nuanced, I'll bet. If you're protesting, okay, you need to look at this, maybe this, perhaps that. But if you're going to the Trump rally, well, you're just an idiot. You're just one of these people who don't believe in science. And I recognize there's an outdoor-indoor thing, but I think that there's more editorial points of view in there. So what does the expert say? What do we have to look for? Don't Bill share Miller. Bullhorns. I'm not even an expert, and I can tell you that. It's like joints. Don't share joints. Don't share bullhorns. Don't pass
away. Your bullhorn. That's what I'm saying right now, people.
don't sit around with your friends and pass a bottle of wine around. It's not a good time for things like that.
Now, Bill Miller is an expert from Ohio State, and he
Bill
said...
Bill Miller sounds like a... Bill Miller, look, I think he sold me a used car back in the 80s. Bill Miller.
My friend, Bill Miller, down at Used Pawns.
Hi, Bill Miller here. From Bill Miller Toyota, right here on the Miracle Mile. Come on out, and I'll put you in a new car today. And I'm an expert.
And Bill Miller. Bill Miller, we almost always don't screw you. Yes, go ahead.
He said that people can calculate their risk for exposure by creating a rhyme here. It's called time, space, people, and place. And when you calculate it a little bit further, so time would be the distance.
By the way, hold on. I'm sure this is going on in crowded kitchens full of cigarette chain-smoking revolutionaries. Okay, wait. Time, as they're writing the 17th version of the manifesto, I'm sure that they're very, very worried about this rhyme. What is the rhyme? Okay, explain the rhyme again.
All right, here we go. So it's time, the time spent around other people. Yeah. Space, so it says the distance you can place between you and others. People, which is the knowing the people around you and how well they've been following social distance guidelines, and then the last thing, place, whether you've gathered outside or inside.
Come on, it's that's the Trump thing right there.
Yes.
Well, if you gathered inside, you're just a complete, hopeless, useless idiot. But if you gathered outside, well, now as long as you got these rhymes in your head, nobody. I hope this guy writes a book. I hope he makes money. Useless. What, he's an expert. If you were in the middle of a crowd with a bunch of people screaming, you might want to get tested.
But what's
because
the
it has nothing
say?
To do with the color of your skin. It's that if it's in somebody's body and they scream at you and particles come out of their mouth, then you possibly get it. What did you say, Tim? I'm sorry, I missed what you said there.
I said, but what did the rhyme say?
Time, space, people, and place, guys. Duh.
The name of his next book. I wish him the best of luck, and I hope he makes a lot of money. It's useless information that helps no one.
Irreverent.
Entertaining.
Gut-busting.
Very funny. And doesn't toe any party line.
I think it's a great show.
The Von Hessler Doctrine on 95.5 WSB. Atlanta's news and talk.
All right, Yamamoto, what else do the experts say?
All right, this next one comes from The Fresh Toast, which is the most trusted name in cannabis.
Oh, okay, Canada. Yeah. I wouldn't know that personally, but I have heard that the Fresh Toast is the place to go.
Cannabis experts say...
Hold on, whoa. Cannabis experts?
Yes.
Cannabis experts. Yeah, hey, that guy's a cannabis expert. He told me it would be dank, and it was. He's an expert.
So dang.
Dude knows what he's talking about. Here's our cannabis expert right here.
Yeah, it's dank and it's sticky and it's a really nice hybrid. It's about an 80% indica with a nice 20% sativa kick to give you a little lift. And it smells, oh my God, it smells like blueberries and oranges.
Thank God. Prisons are full of cannabis experts. I don't know what it takes to be a cannabis expert, but go ahead.
Cannabis experts say Elon Musk's outspoken support is helpful, but not enough.
Well, what do they want him to do? They want him to plant marijuana on the moon? Would that help?
Mars. Putting it on Mars.
Are you going to put marijuana on Mars?
Moon marijuana sounds unbelievable, bro.
First, we're going to start on the moon, and then we'll move it to Mars. It'll be the best, most dankest weed ever.
Oh, the Luna strain. Luna strain. Nothing like it. I think Elon Musk, if I could speak for you, if you plant enough marijuana on Mars, it only takes like 60 years to terraform the place. So it helps out. So it's the first crop. The first crop on the moon and then the first crop on the Mars. Let's face it, people. We're going to need to get stoned if we're going to journey out to the stars. Hour two of the Von Hessler Doctrine begins right now. Before we go over and delve into the headlines, do a deep dive into the headlines. Jared, I believe you said you had one more expert say you wanted to.
Yeah, this is forwarded to me from our friend Melanie, the millennial blogger, from Delish, from Delish.com.
Now, hold on. My producer, Melanie, tells me whenever you're on, I'm supposed to play this music underneath you.
So cute.
Is this what they play behind the makeup tutorials and stuff?
I mean, yes. It depends, but it's like really cute.
All right, I only have 2 minutes of it, though, so tell me the story, Jared. Okay.
Experts say we shouldn't keep cucumbers in the fridge, and we had no idea.
Why shouldn't you keep them? Or should you or shouldn't you? I'm missing the point. You should put bananas in the fridge.
You should put bananas in the fridge. You should not put cucumbers in the fridge because
but, like,
after
why?
why can't you put them in the fridge?
Because after 3 days they start to go bad. They start to die.
They are, you know, I don't know if you realize this, Melanie, but like tomatoes, things like, not everything is a fruit. Did you know that? Like, cucumbers are not a fruit. Do you know that?
Wait, no. I think
No. I'm putting this totally wrong, but this music is messing me up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm getting all my information wrong.
Like me, and
I'm upside
so
down
hilarious.
Here. Like... I'm upside down. I got really stoned after that last break, and I'm mixing up my words.
No,
most
I get
people
it.
Think cucumbers are a vegetable, but they're not
right.
a vegetable. They are a fruit. Did you know?
I know.
That?
And like, I freaked out when I found out that tomatoes were what is it? A fruit. Like, that's crazy.
Well, you know, there are others. I don't know if you realize this. There's peppers, every kind of pepper, bell peppers.
Shut up.
Yeah, it's actually a fruit, not a vegetable.
You're confused. No.
No, I'm not.
A pepper is not. Shut up. I am not putting fruit in my, like, pizza.
Seeds. It's about seeds. If there's seeds, that's why a tomato is a fruit, not a vegetable.
What do you mean? Like, a carrot has seeds, right? Like, you just, like...
What?
Doesn't a carrot have seeds or whatever?
Have you ever had to spit seeds out after eating a carrot?
I don't know, because maybe I just eat them. Okay, what else is there? It's stupid.
Pumpkins.
No.
Pumpkins are
Shut up!
Well, okay, you can't overreact every time, Melanie.
But I'm freaking out.
No, you're not. You'll be okay. Peas.
Peas?
Now, peas
are... What are you talking about? Peas are not a fruit.
Well, peas are actually the seeds. It's the pod. String beans are a fruit.
Oh, my God.
I
up is like, down. Down is up. Like, I'm all kinds of turned around. Like, I don't get it.
I'm just going to keep telling you things that are not a vegetable.
Stop.
Just because I see if your head will just blow off at
Stop
some point.
It. The next thing you're going to tell me is that, like, a cucumber is a horse. Like, you don't make any sense anymore.
Eggplant is a fruit.
What is an eggplant?
The real life thing. The thing that you eat.
The emoji is, like, kind of hot. Yeah. So.
There's one. This is going to blow you away.
Okay.
Avocados.
What? What are you telling me?
It's a fruit.
Stop it!
Just trying to make her lose her mind. I know.
Stop!
This is just boring to people listening, but I'm just going to keep listing things until her head just blows off. Olives are a fruit.
Olives are not a fruit. Like, that's not true. It's just not. And I really don't appreciate you lying to me and your audience like that. Yeah. Like, it is not cool. This is called, like, shock jockery, okay? And
no, it's not shock jockery.
It
no.
needs to stop now because in this time, like, it's
chickpeas.
Not important right now.
Chickpeas.
Chickpeas are not a fruit.
They're a fruit.
Listen, a fruit
classified,
is something that grows, like, on a tree or, like, a bush. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, juicy when you bite it and it's sweet. That's what a fruit is. That's, like, definition of a fruit.
All right, sit down for this one, Melanie.
Okay.
Corn.
Corn? What? Corn is what? You're telling me corn is a fruit.
Qualifies as a dry fruit. That's right. Okay, let's do the deep dive into the headlines.
He's a liar.
Melanie, you just go to the corner.
He's
a liar. You're going to be
up. Hey, Melanie,
you're a dirty liar, and I'll never believe anything you say again. So go ahead and read your stupid headlines and just, like, go ahead, audience, and if you're dumb, believe whatever he's talking about because he's a liar. Corn is not a fruit, and I'm done. I'm done.
Qualifies as a dry fruit. It certainly
does. I'm literally dead.
No, you're not lit. You're figurative.
I am literally
dead. Understand what's going on with the one. You're
not
literally
dead. RIP me because I'm dead.
You cannot speak.
Have a funeral. I want everybody to come except for you because you're a liar and because I'm literally freaking dead. It's crazy.
You're not literally dead.
I'm like dead. Bye.
Hey, Melody, this concludes today's class on cucumbers.
Yeah, we're done with cucumbers. She had some other stories to tell, but I told her she can't tell those stories.
Yeah,
what about rutabagas? I want to know about those.
All right, what's going on in the headlines that we have not covered? After all, this is WSB. It's a news and information station.
Well, fasten your seatbelt for this one. A new
study.
By
the way, hold on. That reminds me of something. I'm sorry to interrupt. People hate it when I do. But I've been in radio a long time. And the first talk radio station I ever worked at in Los Angeles, we were having a big meeting with all the talk show hosts. And so Cindy Brady was there. And Ken Ober. Remember Ken Ober? He was the host of Remote Control on MTV.
Oh, yeah.
He was there. Cato Kalin was there. I was at the station. It was just craziness. In the mid-90s, all the people that were on. And one of them was Mother Love. She had a national moment. She was the host of that, you know, that show where you open the door and then you have to date the guy that's on the other side of the door?
Oh, yeah.
It was a show that was on for a while. It was called Love Match or something. I don't know. She was on that. And boy, was she full of herself. She was the least known person in the room. This is 1995. Cato Kalin's in the room, and the OJ trial isn't wrapped up yet in Los Angeles. So she's really kind of, well, I was the least known person in the room. But next to me, Mother Love was the least known person in the room. And we're going around ideas and stuff, big meeting. And I remember Mother Love had the great idea that we should call it the News and Information Station. Because it rhymes, you see? Yeah. It rhymes. And I'm going to say, you know what? I scoffed at the time, but if my managers are listening right now, I think we should pick up on the wisdom of Mother Love and WSB, your News and Information Station. So give us some news and information. And I promise I will not interrupt you again, Jared Yamamoto.
A new study published in the...
Hold on. Just kidding. Just kidding. Just kidding.
Guys, buckle up your seatbelt. Yes, because buckle. This is a doozy.
This is a big one here. It really is. Melody, you'll need this too. Just be ready for it. This new study published
in the... Oh, I don't
wear
a seatbelt.
Well, great. Great, Melody. What are you going to do now? You're not going to be ready
for this.
No, it's
just like dumb. Like, what's a seatbelt going to do? It's stupid. Go ahead.
You also plenty of things.
You also text too while you drive, right? Text.
Well, yeah, but I can do that. Like, you know how to do it. I know how to do it. We grew up on cell phones and drive. It's cool. We got it.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy. You just hold your.
Well, I tell you, ladies and gentlemen, the future is in good hands.
Oh, that's so sweet. Thank you.
So this new study that's been published in the Physics of Fluid Journal has found.
Whoa! Number one, this is a family show. What is the name of that journal again? The Physics of Fluids.
The Physics of Fluids Journal.
I think that wasn't that Robert Plant's first album.
Yes.
The Physics of Fluid.
Yep.
I believe Big Log is on there.
No.
Is this some sort of philosophy thing? The Physics of Fluid?
Yes.
No. We find out what a volume of fluid would weigh in another dimension. Go ahead.
Yes, and they have found that flushing toilets can spread coronavirus.
That makes sense, right? You got to be careful with the flushing of toilets. This is why, by the way,
you have to close the lid is all right.
Well, that's why I was always I almost lost my man card just as I was becoming a man. Well, just at the point that I was going into radio as a man, so like my mid-20s. And when I got into radio, if you had any kind of show that did anything kind of funny, well, you were going to do Who's Right. Is it the man or the woman in the relationship about whether or not the toilet seat should go down after you're done? Yeah. And by and large, men didn't care. Oh, leave it up. And then women would say, oh, put it down. And I almost lost my man card because I was with the women. I would say put it down simply because, number one, it's a hole in the ground to a sewer. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, so you probably want to keep a lid down on a sewer. So that's a good idea. And then also, yeah, absolutely. When you're flushing, what do you think happens there? You think particulates aren't flying off into the air onto the towel? Think of that. You keep
your
the lid
toothbrush.
Up. On your, well, I'm rich enough that my toothbrush is in another room. I have a different, for those who have to keep their toothbrushes.
You have a man for that. Your man holds it.
Into the same. I have a little room that has just the commode. But
room.
Yes, if you are one of these people who don't have your own commode room, you will have to deal with that. Yeah, but just think of it. Think of it. So if you leave the seat up after you're done with your business and you flush it, then you wash your hands, then you turn to the towel that you just sprayed all this particulates upon. So it doesn't really matter. At the bottom line, whether I lose my man card or not, you should always put the lid down before you flush. So it doesn't surprise me that COVID-19 which you know, we have it all through our sewers now. I'm gonna stop drinking out of the sewer. I can tell you that.
I'm gonna stop exploring my sewers.
I explored a stool once, and I just hated piano lessons, so I got out of it. Yes.
Can you believe though that what makes me more upset about this is when you're looking for sound effects in WSB's library, they don't have a closed toilet flush sound. They only have the open toilet flush sound.
Well, let's hear the open. Well, Jared, in an entrepreneurial society, you don't complain. You create the product that fixes the problem. You, sir, could make money in sound effects being the first one to introduce toilet flushing with lid closed. That's your Perfect. Future, my friend. I always knew you had it in you. I knew it was going to have something to do with the bathroom.
You always success. Believed in me. You always well, believed in me.
I thought it would be porn, but if it turns out to be this, you know, so much the better. How about a barfly update? Autumn Fisher, have you gone out to the bars lately looking for some action, looking for some tail?
No,
as
I'm
we
still
found
recovering.
Out, happened over the week. You're still recovering?
Still recovering.
Have you wanted to? I was thinking about you. It's like you're at that age. You might be turning into a cougar. You need to start going to bars where...
None of the guys that I saw were young enough for me.
That's what I'm saying. You got to go to the bars where... you know, the young D-bags hang out.
She'd be perfect.
By young D-bags. By young D-bags, of course, I mean frat boys. You got to go to the bars where the frat boys hang out. And, you know, they won't love you or even like you, but they'd like to, you know,
they give
check
Mama
off
what
your box.
She needs.
That's right. And so, if you don't know, Autumn just surprised us all over the weekend that she went to a bar all by herself and just sat there like an old lush. I don't know what she was waiting for. I think I know what I was waiting for. You're out there playing the field.
No, I'm just
hey, you need
trying,
to ride home. You need
just
to ride
trying
home.
To have a friendly drink by myself.
That doesn't happen with women. You don't have a
well,
friendly.
That's annoying.
How are you supposed to have a friendly drink by yourself? Who's the friend? The drink? That could be a problem. I don't know. You got to watch it. I tell you, I'm very good. I'm considered paranoid. And an overreactor quite often, because sometimes I see things right in their infancy. And so it may seem like an overreaction for me, the way that I've reacted to Autumn just deciding on Sunday night to go to a bar by herself. But I'm usually very good at predicting. Mm-mm-mm. I have a cauldron of my own, and I can be Nostradamus-like in predicting the future. And if this kind of thing continues... within 5 years, she's going to be one of these sad barfly females with a gin blossom at the end of the bar. Hey, who wants to buy a pretty girl a drink?
Who wants to hear an impression?
You ever heard of Kathy Griffin?
All right. So go ahead. You have an open mic. Where do you want to go? You got another story for me?
I have an open mic from the WSB radio app. This lady loves the show.
Oh, my gosh. You are just, like, so funny. Thank you, Eric Von Hessler and the Doctrines, for making my day in these depressing, dreary times. I just can't bear to turn on the radio to hear the craziness out there. But I turn it on for you every single morning at 9 o'clock because you really make my day. You make me laugh, and I really need it. So... your humor is just so incredible, but in your knowledge and
hey,
the
going.
Doctrinaires
like
and the banter.
The banter. Sounds like that could be good or bad, the banter. Like the banter's,
no, banter's
hey,
good.
The banter's
Witty
good.
Banter.
But I can imagine Marlon Brando in Apocalypse Now at the end of the banter.
The banter.
The banter. What I would say, is, in a very rough world that we're going through, 2020 has been a very tough year for everybody. I think the Von Hessler Doctrine adds this. Doesn't everybody need a break?
Should I not talk? It's like not my segment.
It's not your time.
Okay, you guys, I just heard about this thing where like fruit isn't vegetables or something.
Okay, we've already done that, Melanie. Melanie, we've already done that. All right, go ahead.
Cucumbers.
All right, next story or whatever you have for me. I'm wide right. open today, Jared Yamamoto. I'm wide open, and whatever you want to throw at me, whatever your next story is it a hard story? Is it rough? Is it negative? Is it positive? I don't care. Just throw it at me.
I'm having fun, so I'm going to keep the fun stories here. So Arnold Schwarzenegger is in the headlines, and he refuses to work out at Gold's Gym in Venice, California, because the members won't wear masks. But he
Arnie.
Has... Yeah.
Arnie. Arnie, yeah. You're mad. Yeah. You're not going to... Yes.
They won't wear the mask. They won't put on the mask in the in whatever, you know, that you can put on the hanky or use old, like a t-shirt or something, but they won't wear it. So, you know, I'm just going to sit in my hot tub with my donkeys and all the animals we have in the kitchen, yeah.
Do your animals wear masks on the farm?
Yeah, yeah, the donkey, I had a special mask for them because according to the experts, maybe the donkeys have the COVID.
It could be. You know what's weird about this Arnold Schwarzenegger thing? First of all, I'm glad he still works out. Guys like him, as they get old, they look like they've they don't look like they get out of shape. They just look
like a melting like a
beach,
candle.
Yeah, like a beach ball that's lost its air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, they just they're baggy and they're looking like the women in the face.
You start to sort of deflate. So I think it's a good idea to be out there, but I'm confused by this Arnold Schwarzenegger. I see two things, Rome. Either he's working out or he's smoking a cigar. Are both of those good for your health? If you're on a healthy kick, where do the cigars come in as...
Nicotine and by the way, stops the COVID.
Oh, this, really? The cigar yeah. stops the COVID? I had no idea. Yeah. All right. We will return. See a story here. Got me thinking of something else. So the headline in the New York Post is Bill Belichick. Who's that, Autumn?
He is a coach for football.
For the entire game of football. He is the head coach.
Oh,
Bill,
yep.
Bill Belichick fired up to prove Patriots can win without Tom Brady. And that got me thinking, because that's a big sports conversation that goes on. Who's going to get the best of whom quickly? Is it Tom going to win? Bill going to win? But it got me thinking, as Falcons Nation, the only good thing about maybe losing the NFL season. And if you would have asked me a month ago, I would have been positive we'd have an NFL season. Now I'm beginning to wonder. Maybe we will, maybe we won't. But Falcons Nation, if you think about it, now I know Matt Ryan only has a few years left, but if the Tampa Bay Bucks lose this year, I mean, there's a timer going with this guy, right? They're paying this guy $30 million a year. He's already 42 years old. I think most of us believe he's not going to be that good at 47. Some people argue how good he's going to be right now at this age. But so for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and if you're part of Falcons Nation, there's a good hatred that goes on there. Matt Ryan's got a few years left. That window is closing. But if you're a Bucs fan who got so excited that Tom Brady, the greatest of all time, came to our team for his final 2 years, and you lose one of those 2 years... You're really kind of... So I think that figuring out that we'd all be let down as football fans if we didn't get an NFL season, here's the bright spot for Falcons fans. Just think of your Tampa Bay Buccaneer friends and fandom and what a letdown, because this guy, the timer is going. You don't just get another year back with Tom Brady. Yes, Jared.
I went down a Twitter rabbit hole last night about that because this very topic came up, and a lot of people were suspecting, conspiracy theorists were suspecting, that Belichick was the one that released COVID-19 out on everybody else to prevent Tom Brady from having a winning season afterward. Now, obviously, it's a stretch.
Bill Belichick, is this true? Are you the person behind COVID-19?
Well, we're just going to talk about the way we react to the problems, and we'll address them as they come along.
I mean, no. That was the question. I was asking you a specific question. Did you release
COVID? Your question.
No, you didn't. The question was, did you release COVID-19 as a way to truncate Tom Brady's time with the Buccaneers?
Well, I don't want to get any kind of conspiracy theories. We're just going to get our team out there and play on the field.
I didn't ask you about the team, Bill Belichick.
Yeah, we wish Tom well. He was created.
I'm strangling my microphone. Let's do this.
Years.
What the?
Seriously, what the?
WTF with Autumn Fisher.
All right, Autumn Fisher. What the fun and games? What's going on out there?
In a response to COVID-19, many airlines are reducing or suspending their alcoholic drink service.
Now, this is being done in order to make contact between the customers or the passengers, I guess they're customers, the passengers, sure, and the crew I will be a little bit maybe unpopular here and say I've never liked the idea of alcohol on a plane to begin with.
Oh.
I think I come from a famous family of alcoholics. And by the time I was 11 or 12 years old, just based on family picnics, I could tell you alcohol first, trouble between human beings next. And it seems to me that when you're in a toothpaste tube at 30,000 feet and there is no exit without death, it's not a good place for people to get bombed. Even it's not even a good place for somebody on the crew to have to inform a passenger, we've decided you've had too much and you don't need another one. Why can't people go? Now, maybe if you're flying to Australia and it's 10 hours or something, why do people have to have a beer between Atlanta and New York City? Why is it fun? I don't even understand why
people...
Because
you're bored. And you're like, eh, what can I do? I can get a little buzz on.
This I love.
Take
this
flight.
I love. You're flying 30,000 feet in the air and you're bored.
Yeah, but they're...
That's number one.
No. When you say that, it sounds like you are like Superman and you're flying. That's Superman
you're
doesn't...
You're sitting in a chair. You're sitting in a chair
no,
flying
but you're in a
the
pressurized
air.
Cabin. You don't
pretty
feel
amazing.
Anything that me, that, that is gives you any sort of inkling that you're traveling that fast or that high up.
Let's take it. Look, let's take it out of alcohol. Let's say ginger ale. Let's say a Coke. How often in your life? Okay, let's go Atlanta to New York City. What's that, about 2 hours? About
yeah.
2 hour flight? Okay, how often in your day do you go 2 hours without having a snack and a soda? Quite most 2 hour periods of your day you go through without a snack or a soda. But for some reason, sitting down in a seat and taking off and then leveling at about 30,000 feet, everybody has to have a snack and a soda.
Well,
it's
that's part of the trick to keep your mind off the fact that you are traveling so fast.
If anything goes wrong, you're going to fall 30,000 feet. Yes.
Right.
You
and
don't
you're
want
like,
people thinking
drunk
about
it. I don't care.
Exactly.
Yeah. And sometimes
you used to work. I'm not going to say where you used to work, but it's an airline. It's local. It starts with a D, it ends with an A. And then there's an elt in the middle.
Yeah, don't,
I
don't give it away
it
now.
I don't want to give it away. But you worked there for a very long time. You were a red coat, which meant you were an enemy of the United States. You were a red coat. So you were in hot. You were the guy that people went to and they needed to solve a problem.
Yeah, they would definitely have issues and people.
I'll bet you. I don't know. But if you looked at most of the issues that happen during flight, I will bet you alcohol is involved more often than not.
Because
people who aren't tipsy just let things go. But there's a certain type of personality that an awful lot of people have that once they get a little alcohol in them, there's nothing they let go. There's no slight that they won't push back on. And that's the situation I don't want when I'm stuck in this toothpaste tube flying at 30,000 feet with it, unless I'm there with a friend or a family member, guess what? I don't care about any of you. So just don't be a part of my life. Don't make, you know what? You know, when you get on a plane, the first rule in your mind should be, let's not turn this into a memory. Let's let this be the blandest thing.
Point.
It just kind of seeps out of my memory. Unless you're 8 and you're flying for the first time, you don't want a memory that happened. Just Jared. But
there are a couple scenarios, though, that I disagree with you. A lot of times the problems came when people originated from Atlanta and they would go to the bars in the concourse, not even when they were drinking on the plane, and they would come up to the gate and they were too drunk to fly. That's when one of the issues would happen.
Yeah, not for that. I'm not. Look, you know what? I say nothing. I don't want no food. No, I think you should have to fast for 10 hours before you get on a plane.
It's like a surgery.
Yeah, everybody would be groggy and just go to sleep. Give them a pillow.
You have to get enemas. You know, you have to drink that.
Autumn's always trying to work enemas into everything.
Yeah,
I don't really understand. I feel like
well, listen, that way
you
fast for, you know, what'd you say, 10 or 12 hours before
whatever a good fasting
that means
takes.
No bathroom.
Yeah, exactly. You go up, you just show up on a plane, any flight under 5 hours, you just show up as empty as possible.
They should just seep a little sleepy gas in there, and everybody just goes to sleep while you fly.
Yeah, Vladimir Putin does that on Russian Airlines. So.
It's right, you get there in like 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Just put everybody
That's a great
to sleep.
Idea, though. It's so boring in that stupid plane. Just take a little gas, wake up, and you're in your
destination. I'm never bored.
Lower
never
the
bored.
Oxygen level in the plane.
I'm never bored because I'm always thinking about what if. when I'm on a plane. I sound
like you need a drink.
Yeah, you're
no, fine. It makes
you
it
do.
Worse.
You do sound like
a drink. I have a weak stomach, so then now I've got the what ifs going in the brain and the weak stomach, and it makes it even worse. I tried that in the 80s. I was on a plane that had a bar. Like it was like one of those airport movies.
Wow.
Like you walked up to a bar.
James Bond was there.
One plane in my life. And I thought, okay, I'm not a big fan of, I'll just get drunk at this bar. It was the worst flight ever. I was still frightened, and my stomach felt like it was about to rebel against me.
Now, what if you're flying with friends and you're going somewhere cool, like Las Vegas, or in the New York situation, if you're flying up to New York and you've got a party you got to go to? I mean, this could be
this
the
is
only
Eric's
time
mind.
You can pregame, that you can pregame. Well,
you have a pregame. Why do you have to pregame a party? The concept is a party. This idea we have to pregame for a party. What, does the party last 7.5 minutes? Isn't the party long enough to get started, have a beginning? At the beginning of the party, most people weren't drunk. In the middle of the party, it was a mix.
You want to walk into the party already lubricated enough.
Why?
At a good level. At a good level.
What does it take? You know, give me a, you know, give me two, give me a thing of whiskey. It won't be long before I'm tingling. Does it take you people an hour and a half of drinking to get inebriated or a little bit tipsy?
I like to take an Uber to the airport and inject tequila into my veins.
She's a big Trumper, this one. Everything is about injecting. he doesn't drink, but that's maybe a way to...
Boy.
If we could just figure out a way to do that, right, Mr. President? We could all be drunk.
If you could get it right into your veins without having to put it in your belly, it would be wonderful.
That's right, Eric. That's what you need.
No,
so it doesn't
hurt
your belt, your sensitive tummy.
I do have a sensitive tummy. It's the only thing that's kept me...
I can't have a drink on the airplane.
My weak stomach, I love the fact that I have a weak stomach. Because I come from famous family of alcoholics. The only thing that kept me from being an alcoholic is that my stomach always gave out before I would black out. Everyone else in my family had these scenes of blackout scenes where just crazy stuff happened. I mean, I had... Growing up, I mean, there were just things going on around me. It just might as well have been like 17 homeless people screaming at my house because everyone was blackout drunk.
That's sad.
No, they weren't very violent. That's the good news. They weren't real. They weren't naturally violent.
A loaded parent cannot be a good parent.
Most of that happened on Christmas Eve, and somehow we managed. Santa still managed. I never noticed. I was too young to know that my parents were hungover. But it did happen every Christmas Eve that I would hear my parents screaming at each other like 2 a.m. drunkenly. And then I'd wake up and the tree was there and everything was, you know, they figured it out.
That's so sad, though.
No, it was great. The presents were there.
No.
Once you give a kid
a
present,
you
forget about that.
As a little kid who hears that, that affects you in some way. And don't try and tell me that it did. Like, oh,
I woke
up and
it was
Christmas.
Didn't affect me at all. Yeah. Hey, how much, you guys know me. You guys know me. How much do I love Christmas?
It's not about that.
Well, I think normally you would think that I would hate Christmas if there was some sort of negative.
No, you were
so obviously
onto
I didn't
it, like the you know was holding onto it for dear
you know
life.
What
I'm,
no,
like
no, no. I
don't.
I'm sorry, therapy
world.
People. I wasn't like that. Even when I was 9 years old, I looked around and I said, "I'm not like these people. One day I'll be able to do my own thing." That's the way I thought about it.
Get your daily dose of comic relief with Eric Von Hassler mornings at 9. Then shake off the daily stress.
And it's gonna be all right.
With Mark Arum weeknights at 6 on 95.5 WSB.
Almost no time here, so let's try to squeeze in another WTF story, Autumn.
Cameo is now offering for you to pay thousands of dollars to talk to celebrities for 10 minutes.
Now, usually you call, you get them to leave you a message or something, right? But these are now... Who are some of the... How does it cost different money for different people?
It does.
So who is there?
The costliest performer is Brett Favre.
What's
that? $5,000.
$5,000, Brett Favre? What's Brett Favre? Hey, man, I love your militia. Remember he got in trouble on Cameo once because he...
Yeah, man, I like what you're doing with that whole militia thing. Make sure you get all the bullets and everything you need.
Don't ask me any questions. I don't even know about football. You know that story about Brett Favre? He had to ask the backup quarterback in Green Bay what the nickel defense was. He had no idea. The guy's like, oh, you know, it's five defensive backs. You have the nickel back. And Brett Favre goes, who gives a damn? I just throw it hard to the guy who's open. So if he's not even going to be able to talk to you much about football. I hope Charlie Sheen's in there.
Is Charlie Sheen?
I'm on hiatus.
See
right
there?
Now. I'm hiatus. Hiatus.
I'd pay $5,000 to talk to Charlie Sheen for 10 minutes.
What's up?
Hour three of the Von Hessler Doctrine begins right now. And we should say Cameo that we were talking about is not the, we're not talking about the Word Up band from
Word
the 90s.
A Word Up.
How's it going?
We're talking about some of this is, you get celebrities, you pay money, and celebrities leave a message for you. And now the story is, for different amounts of money, you can actually have 10-minute conversations. Are these Zoom calls?
That's
Does the celebrity have to dress up, Autumn, and appear on camera, or is this a phone call?
As much as they want to, right?
Yeah,
I mean, it depends on the celebrity.
You're going to actually see them. Because actually, if I was that kind of celebrity that people wanted to pay money to have a phone call with me, I'd hire someone like Tim Andrews, split the money with him. I don't have to do anything. He just does my voice, has the conversations. Hey, how's it going?
Well, if you want to talk to me, I'm just going to ramble at you for 10 minutes, and then you're going to go away.
I want $100 for Eric Von Hessler to lecture me on the phone for 10 minutes. Yeah. And I don't get to butt in even once.
Why don't you eat, fatso?
It's simple. It's a 2 + 2 = 4 fact.
I can help people. I can see how this could help people. Actually, Tim Andrews actually does this kind of thing. I believe you have... you can get messages from Tim Andrews in different voices. Is that not correct? I'm trying to set you up to make some money here.
That is very correct. You can go to my Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Tim Andrews, and you can find out there. That is my fan page, and I'll do whatever voice you'd like me to do, and I won't charge you $1,000.
Is it OnlyFans? Can I request that you take your shirt off?
No. I don't make much money on my OnlyFans page. People pay me to get off of it.
When Tim talks about stuff like this, he kind of adopts a radio voice. Have you noticed
that? He does.
Yes, we'll be doing, you give me a call.
He turns into Tim Michaels.
Coming up next on Sunny 95.5.
That's right. Coming up next on Sunny 95.5 is this.
What's the market doing with Money Matters, Wes Moss.
If your station is called Sunny 95.5, do you have to go off the air when it's cloudy? I don't know.
It only comes in on your radio when it's sunny. Yeah.
The phrase of the day would be tone deaf. It's a cloudy day. Don't tell me it's sunny. Hey, Wes Moss, host of Money Matters right here on WSB, 9 a.m. every Sunday morning. How are you, sir?
Good morning. I'm good. Good. People ask me if I do radio, I don't tell them I do Money Matters anymore. I just say I'm a guest on the Von Hessler Doctrine on WSB Radio.
You, sir, are what we now call an honorary doctrinaire. You're an honorary doctrinaire.
No, really?
Yes. Well, you're on every damn day. I mean, at some point, you become...
Okay,
You keep going to the party enough, or you keep, you put enough money in the tray that gets passed around, before you know it, you're part of the congregation. That's how it works. So you're an honorary... Now, as an honorary member, you don't get all the benefits of being a founding member.
Okay.
But so you're going to have to pay for your own drinks. But you can tell people that you are tangentially a member of what we call the doctrinaires. You're in an outer concentric circle, but you're working your way in with your your good works here
every morning. I like it.
To tell us how the economy is doing. I took a look at the Dow. It seems to be down a little bit. I don't really know what that means. But what do you see right now?
Because I'm like, I don't know what that means either.
Well, except I have a reason to not know what it means. I don't know what it means because I'm confused by what I'm reading. You don't know what it means because you don't read. Those are two very different reasons.
Well, I don't know how to read, so.
Well, I didn't mean to bring that up because I don't want to.
I'm proud.
Well, if you're proud of it, I say use it. But I think that there is...
Well, guys, go ahead.
Some people, an awful lot of people are starting to worry about the uptick of hospitalizations in some areas that have opened up and beginning to believe that maybe... I think China shut down Beijing again for a while, and people are a little worried that there could be a re-lockdown. I don't know if that's going to happen, but where do you stand?
You know, I've been trying to think of an analogy on that. You know, first of all, a couple things I'm watching today. One, looking at the pattern of what happened with markets in 2003 after the huge crash we had in 2001 and two, and then how markets reacted a few months past that. Same thing in 2007-08, what happened in 2009. And there was this phase of consolidation, and meaning that the market kind of bumps higher and bumps lower in a pretty tight range for a while. Like, it's getting its footing. But I will tell you that there's still a lot of nervousness, which to some extent is a good counter indicator for the market, that we are going to have a really tough fall. My analogy, and I was just talking to a family yesterday, the concern of investors right now is very much, hey, I keep hearing about these flare-ups. And a flare-up, last time we heard about flare-ups, what did it lead to? It led to total government lockdowns of the entire country, total economic shutdowns, 24/7 coverage of COVID-19, overrun hospitals. So listen, it's a very visceral, we got to remember the emotion of what the market and the headlines do to us. And the trauma, I think about just the lasting trauma of the tech crash. It's still not gone. I think of the lasting market trauma of 2007-08. It still isn't over. And I think that we have a new layer, almost a new scar that we have to get that'll be here forever. And it's still very, very fresh. So the worry I'm getting is, hey, Wes, I keep hearing about the second wave. When are we going to go? And are we going to go into another lockdown? And I've been very adamant that that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen on a broad scale at all. But it doesn't mean the general public thinks that or hears me or even believes that. People are still very nervous about this.
Well, you're right about
that. So that's the next point. Yeah, they really are. Well, and then the third point is that investors have actually not participated a lot. So people have not added a bunch to stocks over the last couple month period. The flows have actually been into things like bonds that are meant more for safety. So people are still nervous and scared.
You're thinking about, when you talk about the psychology of the country, I don't think that we're going to end up going into a full-on lockdown again, because I think that most people that know anything about anything just don't think that the country can handle that. If we do it again, it's going to have to be regions and hot spots and things like that. But I'm beginning to think that it's likely, if we are not able to gather together, if we can't figure out a way to, you know, the NFL season, for instance, I bring that up a lot because it's the most popular, I think it's the, after making money, sex and making money, I think football is the most popular thing in America, meaning more people care about it than almost anything else. And I'm beginning to, I think that we may find ourselves in a midway point in the fall where we don't have enough cases to necessarily go into a big lockdown again. We have hot spots, but we have enough cases to really amplify the fact that things are not normal. And if we lose things like an NFL season, we're heading into a Christmas where things are still, maybe the NBA thing starts up and then has to stop because some players, and psychologically that gets inside of people and doesn't make you hopeful about the future. And what is investing or planning of any kind of financial thing? It's you, if you're hopeful, you put money forward, and if you're less than hopeful, you pull money back. And so psychology matters a lot. I'm beginning to think that we may end up in an in-between thing that goes on in the fall. Not enough for a full lockdown, but not open enough to feel like things are back to normal, and that's going to work on people psychologically.
I think it will. And my analogy, and I've actually been trying to come up with this, because the wave, just the term wave, you think of, you know, you don't think of down on 30A at the Gulf and you've got these nice, you know, casual waves. You think tsunami.
Yeah,
so, you know, my analogy,
overwhelming, drowning comes to mind.
A nice wave. Yeah. Oh, look at this nice wave. No, you think of, you know, World Surf League Championship 60-footers or, you know, something that hit, you know, the coast of Japan. Like, it just, it's a scary, scary analogy. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the problem, is that that's what's burned into our psyche, is wave means tsunami. And I think it's more like this. We're driving down the road. Things are great. Beautiful highway in 2019 and early 2020. And we effectively hit a massive sinkhole that was caused the worst traffic problem possible, and it took 2 to 3 months to fix that. Now we're back on the road, we're moving again, And I think for the rest of this year, we're just going to keep hitting speed bump, speed bump, mm-hmm. speed bump, speed bump. So that's my analogy, is that it's a bunch of speed bumps mm-hmm. over the next, call it 6 months. I do not think we're going to get hit by a tsunami, but not everybody believes that. That's my sense.
Yeah, you know, I'd be interested to watch places like Vegas as they've opened up. Of course, you get the hardcore addicted gamblers. They don't care. They'll go play, smoke cigarettes in a bubble and play whatever. The bubbles in between them and the dealer and the other people that are playing. Be interesting to see. Does the casual gambler, the casual person who goes to Vegas, do crowds pick up? Or did we just see that the people who were jonesing to go to Vegas, that happened, and then what happens after that? That will point to where the psychology is. People listening might think I'm foolish about this, but if we lose an NFL season, I think that psychologically people will just kind of like pack it in until February of next year. And when we come back, I want to talk to you about something that they're talking about in Vegas. And maybe something that happens after COVID-19 is all gone. Are we going to lose cash? People think of cash as something that passes viruses around. We'll talk about that when we get back. Still talking with my friend Wes Moss, host of Money Matters, right here, 9 a.m. Sunday mornings. 2 hours of financial fun. That's what I consider it. I set my clock by it. Absolutely. The best financial show in the world. Before I went to the break, I told you I want to talk about whether or not we're going to become a cashless society ultimately after COVID-19. We may have touched on this before, but I want to talk about it a little bit deeper. There are some things we all acknowledge that are going to change forever after COVID-19. For instance, a lot of people found out they can do their job from work, whether they'll do it. I mean, we all knew that. Do their job from home. Whether we do that 5 days a week or just go into the office 2 days, 3 days at home, things like that. The world is going to be different after COVID-19 because we're all adapting. My question is, you know, we've been moving toward the cashless society inevitably before COVID-19. Now people are worried that they're passing a virus along. And what do you think, Wes? Do you think that we will actually... I see a story here that says that Vegas may go cashless very soon. And once places like that go, if you can't gamble in cash, what the heck are you going to do with it? 10 years from now, 15, 20 years from now, you think we're a cashless society?
I don't think there's any question that we're moving that direction. I just think about, you know, and again, I think if you go back to even 10 years ago, the thought was, hey, cash is going to go away. And then there was data that showed that cash actually had increased, even though the world was moving to digital. And I think that's just because the aggregate use of money continues to expand. So I think also, the percentage of cash is going to go down.
It's also the only way. Cash becomes the only way not to be tracked.
Yep.
You know, I love ordering everything and I love having stuff come to my front door, but all of that is paid through credit card, or I don't know if you're a Bitcoin person, however, it's digital and there's a record of everything that you buy. And it might kind of creep people out. People do have their darker desires, their fetishes, things that they, you know, like, and it doesn't even have to be sexual. It can be gambling. Right? There may be
How
somebody.
I'm going to buy my scratchers without my husband.
Maybe there's somebody who doesn't really want their wife to know how much they gamble, right?
Can I get a receipt for my meth?
Yes. I got to start paying digitally for my drugs. Everyone will know. But I mean, at some point, it does occur to you, if you've been buying everything on Amazon or online for the last 2 or 3 years, there's an absolute record of everything that you buy. And people worry, in the future, will health insurance companies know the foods that I'm buying? If you go to the store and you buy a whole bunch of food that's bad for you and you pay in cash, there's no record of that. If you pay with your credit card, there's an absolute record of that. So, and how detailed that can become in the future is as much as you can be tracked. But hey, we notice, Hessler, you buy a lot of sleeping pills. What's going on? So I think that if we lose cash entirely, we're going to have to set up, you know, our own separate digital accounts for our fetishes. That's what I'm getting at.
I just don't think everyone's going to know what we're doing.
You don't think it's going away?
I just don't think it's going to go away. No, I really don't. I just think that in aggregate, the growth of digital payments will be 200% a year, and the growth of cash might be 5% a year. But it's still, I just don't see it going away. I mean, I think about even my kids, and I have little kids, and I look at what they do. How different are they going to act in with technology and cash? Well, guess what? They're little kids, and they're very used to Apple, you know, paying something through iTunes. Hey, Dad, can I please have the code so we can download or rent a movie, right? I think that they're very used to that. They're almost native to that. But you know what? They still, hey, $5 bill. Can I have a $5 bill? So, you know, until kids don't even want to look at cash anymore, I don't think it's going away.
Yeah, I remember when I was 5 years old, 1969, and the Tooth Fairy left me a quarter. I thought it was the greatest damn thing in the world. Ugh, now I look back at it, I think, wow, my parents were cheap.
I know, I had to give $5 to my daughter for her first tooth.
I know, but yeah, she was born a few years ago. This is 1969, but $1? But I think what they knew is the quarter was shiny, and I was 5. And why pay 75 cents more than you need to? They were really the Clark Howards of their day. Wes Moss, thank you very much. Host of Money Matters right here, 9 a.m. every Sunday morning. We'll talk to you again tomorrow about the COVID economy. Thanks. See a poll here. Associated Press. Americans are the unhappiest they've been in 50 years. Is there a surprise? Hey, here's another story.
We're a little stressed right now.
Here's a little study. Coughs, sneezes that sound disgusting fill bystanders with fear. We live in a world where coughing and sneezing by others around you is seen as a potential threat, and you wonder why Americans are the unhappiest they've been in 50 years. And that's before the economy. We talked ourselves into tanking our economy. I'm not saying we had a better idea, but it didn't happen because of bad fiscal policy. We just decided to lock down the economy, wreck the economy. Now we're going through protest and upheaval and reforms and all of this all at the same time. It does not surprise me that Americans are the unhappiest they've been in 50 years. In order to be happy, you have to wake up and have nice, happy thoughts. It's difficult, especially when it's not between the hours of 9 and noon on WSB in the metro Atlanta area, because you can find some happy. It does exist. But for the most part, you're not getting happy news. You know, people feed on what's around them. And it's hard. You have to fight to not get depressed. And whenever I say depressed on this show, I'm not talking about clinical depression. I'm talking about the up and down roller coaster, normal life, being depressed for a few days. You actually have to fight. You have to fight. Yesterday, I was like, get off the couch, Hessler. Come on, go. Go outside. It's not that far away. It's not that far away. Just crawl if you have to. Slide off the couch. Crawl to the door and just look at the sun for just a moment or two. But not directly, kids. The Von Hessler Doctrine says don't look directly into the sights of the sun. And don't come back with, but Mama, that's where the fun is. Because I don't care about your excuses. You don't need to be looking directly into the sights of the sun. What do you have for me, Jared Yamamoto?
Well, I think you got to add to the unhappiness here. I think you need to have that Who's Canceled sounder ready.
Oh, we haven't used it yet. We have a sounder we haven't used yet.
All right, who's canceled today?
A lot of people. Sort of jumped in volume there, didn't they? A lot of people are being canceled. Celebrities, industrial titans. I just wanted to say that once on my show. Industrial titans are being canceled. So we have a rash of this going on. Who's canceled today, Jared Yamamoto?
And why? If this is true, then he needs to be canceled. So this is accurate.
This has to be pointed out. I think you can't be completely against all cancel culture. Some people should be canceled. I don't know this story. I don't know if this person should be. But the problem is it's a broad brush, right? So somebody tries to say the right thing and they fumble their words and everybody points their finger. Ah, you see, he's really a bad person at heart. Get him out of here. He shouldn't make money ever again. That person should never be allowed to feed their children ever again. So cancel that person. But what's this one about?
This is actor and comedian Chris D'Ila, I believe is how you say his last
name.
Do
I know this person? Do we know this person?
He's on the Netflix show You. That was pretty popular. I guess
You? Y-O-U or just the letter U?
Y-O-U, like as if I'm pointing to you.
Hey, whoa, pal. Back off.
Hey, I didn't say you're canceled. You're not canceled. Chris D'Ila is canceled.
Are you saying only D'Elia?
Yes.
D'Elia. Oh, D'Elia. Wait a minute. Hold on. Jared Yamamoto got the name wrong. That's the first time that's ever happened.
Well,
so you know who this is?
Yes.
Who is this person? Okay, hold on. I'm going to shift over to Autumn because she, I hope this person doesn't have one of the podcasts that Autumn loves because she falls in love with her. Okay, so this is a comedian. What show is he in? Is it in anything other than You, which I've never heard of?
Yeah, he was in Whitney. Remember that show Whitney with Whitney
not
Cummings?
Really. Not really.
Yeah, he was in that show. Remember that show?
Was that a show about creating the cotton gin?
Yes, Whitney? It was about Chris D'Elia Whitney.
It was that whole part there where you lost the plans, you had to redo them? Yes.
Remember the show where they were sort of successful and then they started doing like musical numbers on their show? Remember, like some of theirs.
Maybe a little bit, but let me ask this: is this did they find racist tweets from 10 years ago or something? What's going
on? No, he has been accused of grooming and attempting to solicit nude photographs from underage girls.
Again, see, this is a perfect example of why I have to point out: you can't just flatly be against all cancel culture. Yeah. And man's innocent until he's proven guilty, so we don't know that that's true yet. But here's the CNN. Trump line. If true, it's a bombshell. If true, some things are, you know, we just, you know, are verboten in society. So what is this? So grooming is he would like you're looking on social media and you find somebody who's younger and you start a conversation. And if you're a celebrity, right, it's probably easier.
Yes.
Are we talking like 16-year-old girls or something?
Yes, and one of the examples that's been going around Twitter, at least it's not viral or anything, but it's been going around is him saying that the 14-year-old girls now look like they're 30. And
well, hold on. That's not grooming. That's somebody. Hold on, I mean, is that the biggest problem? Is he connecting with 14-year-old or 15-year-old girls and trying to get them to send him, you know, I don't know.
There are various examples of him talking about that other women
talking about. Now, if all he's saying is little girls dress like women now, that's different to me. Grooming, as I understand it, is you actually target somebody, and because you are older and wiser than they are, you can manipulate them into doing certain things. Sexually, and
it
then
says on Twitter, a woman named Simone Rossi tweeted a screenshot of her alleged interactions with D'Elia and accused him of grooming her. She said, imagine being 16 and being groomed by a stand-up comedian twice your age. And I got a pop-up for The Independent.
Did this happen a few years ago and now she's older? Or is it just happening in real time and she's reporting it?
I think it's happening in real time because there's several examples of other women that have come out and said, hey, like I was 16 when you came out to me and you were just a total dog and you said all these things.
Did he know was the question. I mean, there's a lot here. If true, it's a bombshell using the CNN Trump line. If true, it's a bombshell, certainly for his career, I would imagine. And just what the hell is wrong with people? You know, I got to tell you something. When I turned 18, I thought I was a man. I thought I was a full-grown adult. And now me looking back at me at 18 would be at the age of 18 looking back at me at 5. So 18 is pretty young. I don't think anybody needs to want anything younger than that. Well, I'm looking at Autumn's face, and she's crushed. There's some information she's reading that is really upsetting her. The music tells me we have to go away. Is it worth revisiting when we get back? Are you losing?
Why not?
Okay. And we'll find out exactly why he's lost one fan. It looks to me like he's losing a fan in Autumn Fisher. So, who's this comedian again? Chris?
D'Elia.
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 Well, Jared sometimes sees things. What's that called? What's dyslexia?
Dyslexia.
Do you have a little bit of dyslexia, Jared? I'm asking that as a true question. I'm not being smart.
On.
Or
on,
psych.
On.
Just,
no, I don't have any. I don't have dyslexia.
It happens to me every once in a while. It's happened to me before where you're reading along and it says, bowl punch, punch bowl. Okay, so, I mean, it's
oh, well, some people say bowl punch.
yeah, you would no, double
I
down.
Have, I have not been diagnosed with dyslexia.
Well, I have not been diagnosed with many things that I know I'm stricken with. I don't want to know the truth. All right, so he's being canceled by the social media people for allegedly grooming. And grooming is where someone it's underage people and you're manipulating them because you're older and you're smarter and you know that and you can get them to do things and it usually ends up sexual. Autumn is a fan of this. I've never heard of this person, but Autumn is a fan. And it's interesting. Tell me what you said as we went to break about the different reactions you had when you didn't know you were a fan.
This
is very interesting.
Before we started the segment, Jared was telling us about this comedian who's been canceled. And then you were saying, like, this sounds like there are some people that should be canceled. But he pronounced it Chris Dyla or whatever. And I said, I don't know who that is.
Yeah.
I thought, yeah, let's cancel this guy. What a jerk, you know? And then... I realize it's Chris D'Elia, and I start like, oh, no, that's not true. This isn't true. I got to figure out how this isn't true.
I got to say, though, I'm not pointing to you. It's everybody. I mean, the whole world
this is my honest, true reaction.
Right. I mean, we all dealt with this with Bill Cosby, who I grew up with, is not only a great comedian, but is, some wise old soul that would tell you, pull up your pants and live right. The truth is, we think we know the celebrities that we follow or that we appreciate, but we don't. We not any more than we know the guy who lives seven houses down. We wave to him, right? He's a neighbor. Doesn't seem to be a problem. But we don't know what that guy's doing online. We don't know what's really going on. And you, I want to use the term suffer, but I'm not blaming you. Suffer from that in thinking that, well, you know these people. Oh, I know this guy. You don't know this guy. He's a comedian that makes you laugh. That means he's good at that. But you don't, just because you listen to a podcast a lot or something like that, you don't really know the person. That lesson was made so clear. After Bill Cosby, I was like, okay, no one else on a pedestal. No one else on a pedestal. If Cosby has been a serial rapist the whole time that I've been alive, basically, watching him, then I don't know anybody, and I'm done with this. But it sounds to me like you're going, if this is true that this guy groomed underage women online, it's going to be like a loss in your family to you for a little while. Like, oh, no, Uncle Jim, such a nice guy. Hey, will you be able to get over it?
I am I'm looking deeper into this story, and as I continue to find details and so-called facts and what people's testimonials are, I'm kind of feeling like
Well, you got to remember, they're not saying anything.
There are some people who are a little bit reactionary to now say that this is
not
something.
But let's remember here, the allegation is grooming. The allegation isn't that he did anything or that anything came to fruition. The allegation is simply targeting 14, 15, 16-year-old girls.
16,
and,
not 14.
And 16, okay, and grooming. So
now, the grooming, the so-called grooming that she's referring to is him saying, want to hang out tonight? And she's like, yeah, sure.
No, but then there's another one where he says, you can meet me in the car in the back. Now,
No, that's the thing. She said, I said jokingly, I'll meet you in the back and do something sexual with you.
Okay.
And then he joked back.
So we don't know. We don't know if it's even
see
true.
See, I mean, how it's like not so, it doesn't seem as predatory.
But the truth is, if you didn't like this guy, you just would have gone, cancel him.
Yeah, totally. That's the point.
Now, listen, that's the point.
This is the part in our society that I think is sometimes missing. We don't want to think about our honest reactions as something that all of us are doing. And I think just now with my honest thoughts about exactly what happened, that's where we can start and say, like, this is how human beings react. When it's a stranger, you believe something negative. It's easier to believe something negative than it's when it's someone that you feel closer to or that you might
know. In that same vein, I think you're right as a starting point. Can we get to honestly why you decided to go to a bar all by yourself at 9 o'clock on Sunday night? Because I don't feel like you've been totally honest with me about what's going on in your life.
I have no problem being honest, obviously. This is my, you know, 2020 credo is to be honest with everyone, and including myself. And
yes.
It is not crazy for someone who is, you know, in quarantine, you know, cooped up around her kids constantly to want to go out and just
no, I would say call up a couple of girlfriends and go out. Yeah,
I can't do that. They don't want to
go out alone.
No, I do not have girlfriends.
You have no friends. Now, honestly,
they all are with their kids and refuse to leave their stinking kids. You're like, well, I can't because my kids. Like, no, get out of
the house. Let me ask you a question. Since you're being so honest, Autumn Fisher, and I appreciate it.
Yes,
sir. Let me ask this question. So you go to the bar. You go to the bar. Just going to have some fun by yourself. Not really interested in meeting people, apparently.
I wanted
to see
the
bar.
I wanted to interact and have an interaction with the bartender that knew me.
Which happened very quickly, and you could have had one drink and left.
And I meant to.
And you chose not to. So you stick around. Now, this is my, with this newfound honesty from Autumn Fisher, let's say that night, hypothetically, somebody walks through the door and charismatic, good-looking, think of George Clooney's best year.
Okay.
Best year.
ER days.
Good looking, intelligent
Roseanne.
Guy. Every, you know. And that guy walks in and he buys you a drink and you guys start talking and he's fascinating. And he says, hey, what people don't know, they don't know. What do you think? You and me. Honestly speaking, would you not have gone home that night with George Clooney in his best year, and he's being very flattering. He's telling you how beautiful you are.
No,
I've never talked to someone like you, and it's sincere. It's believable. It doesn't sound like he's hitting on you.
Yeah, no.
And he's over 18, right?
Okay.
Well, I think when he got the job,
Rosemary.
When he got the job, when he got the job at ER, I think he was over 18. So
no.
You saying no that quickly says to me, you still have a little ways to travel on the road of honesty.
No,
so
no,
I wouldn't
because,
be telling.
Just because I don't give you the answer you expect doesn't mean that it's not honest.
Well, no, your honesty is not lining up with my honesty.
Yeah.
And since I'm the host of the show,
your honesty is
hierarchy.
Your own. This is
hierarchy.
My honesty
is the honesty of the host of the show. Your honesty is one of the underlings of the show. So if my honesty meets your honesty, then my honesty wins. And I become the standard.
All right. So then my answer is yes.
Oh, I knew it the whole time. You just went out there because you were horny.
I was looking for George Clooney. He never showed up.
This would be the name of your autobiography. Looking for George Clooney.
Crofton's finest.
Guess what? You know what that music says? It says we have to stop. It makes me feel sad inside because I have no life outside. Social media presence. I have no life outside of this show. And I just have to shut it down for... another few hours till we come back. The good news is I just signed another contract to do a Thursday show. I do one day at a time now. Just got that taken care of 10 minutes ago. So we're going to come back. We're going to do another show, big radio show, fantastic, hilarious, informative, entertaining radio show with all the doctrinaires. You're all invited to join us tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. But until then, continue on the journey. For the time being, keep your social distance from the genie. Thanks for listening to the Von Hessler Doctrine Podcast. Remember, you can hear the show every weekday from 9 to noon right here on 95.5 WSB, Atlanta's news and talk.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.